Grab your coat, oh, get your hat, leave your worry on the doorstep. Just direct your feet to the sunny side of the street. Can't you hear that pretty bass and the happy tune in your step? Life can be so sweet on the sunny side of the street. I used to walk in the shade with the blues on parade, but I'm not afraid. There's a rover, he comes over. If I never have a cent, I'll be rich as Rockefeller. Gold is in my feet on the sunny side of the street. I'm not afraid, 'cause it's Rover, he crawls over. If I never have one cent, I'll be rich as old Rockefeller. Gold doesn't set my feet on the sunny.
Yeah, on that sunny side of the street, baby. Yeah, I like those oldies but goodies. You know, Frank Sinatra's great, too. But Dean Martin, I like Dean Martin, man. I do. I even sing some of his songs once in a while for the ladies. You wouldn't believe it, would you? Hey, Terrible Tommy here, that crazy ass in the bunker back here in north central Indiana, not too far from Box 401. Warsaw, Indiana, 46581, and that's where you send your donations for the radio show, and a lot of you have got them in already, and that's great. And that helps us keep the program going here. And I got to get me some more money orders for the POWs pretty soon. Yeah. And it's a sort of an overcast day here in Indiana, and yesterday it was a little nicer, but it's going to get up into the 70s this week. How about that? I can put on my short shorts and put on my thong and get down in the creek and float around on my inner tube a little bit. Yeah. Let's see. What the hell's going on today? Well, the empire is deteriorating as we speak. And if you don't see it, you're blind, man, because everywhere on all fronts, this empire is unraveling, man. And they don't know whether to shit or go blind. They keep trying to tell us, this is the greatest country in the world. We're the most wealthy country in the world. Wealthy country in the world, and you know what, $20 trillion? Who do we owe that to? I'd say just default on the son of a bitch. Walk away from it. Because they say, well, we just owe ourselves. Well, who is ourselves? Is it Jaime or some of these others that are not Jaimes? Well, anyhow, it's in the Middle East is in an uproar, and Africa is in an uproar, and places around the United States are in an uproar, running out of water all over the place, you know. And out there in California now, they've got a major attack going on the wine industry because there's some low bottom feeders that have gotten into the wine business, and they're not filtering out this Yeah, it turns out that if you've got a million molecules, only 10, maximum 10, should be with arsenic in. Under 10, they say that that comes naturally from the ground. But these bottom feeders, they say, are producing wine up to 50 parts per million. And that is dangerous, can cause all kinds of problems, you know. I don't know about you, but I think it's impossible for the rate, and it may not be connected at all, the rate of homosexuality to have grown as fast as it has. I cannot believe there wasn't enough closets for all these people. All of a sudden, they're everywhere. Everywhere. I'm absolutely everywhere. And I think it's something in the food or in the water or in the or over-the-counter drugs or whatever it is. And maybe it's this wine, arsenic in the wine. But I swear, I mean, unless somebody can prove differently, there's no reason, normal reason, for homosexuality to have just totally exploded overnight, just the last 20 years. They're going to say, well, they were all in the closet. That's bullshit. And there always were homosexuals. Of course there always were homosexuals all the way back, but not to the extent there is now. What do you think about that? Well, anyhow, it got me thinking about that, about the wine. Now, I think that research will show you that a little wine's okay for you. In fact, it's good for you. And in the Mediterranean diet, of course, they drink a lot of wine, and a lot of Europeans drink more wine. But I understand companies like Gallo now are very restrictive at filtering that arsenic out of their wine. And so there's some competent ones that have been around for a long time. But these cheap guys that are starting up these bottom feeding operations are killing people and causing them all kinds of health problems. So if you like a glass of wine for dinner or something like that, you better beware where you're getting your wine and the label. They've got a big court fight now. They're trying to force them to put the amount of arsenic that's in the wine on the label so people are somewhat protected. Anyhow, that's it for that particular issue. You know, I was going to go over there to that pizza parlor in Walkerton today. I understand they're going to reopen, but they didn't say what day, so I don't think they're going to be open today. And in fact, I'd rather things die down a little bit and just drive over there. It's only going to take about 50 minutes. And just go in and have a nice pizza. But I just don't feel we got a dog in this fight. Now, the Christian fundamentalists have come up with already $200,000 for this pizza parlor to give to these people. Well, that's fine, but when is any of our people battling for their race and the whole ball of wax picked up that kind of money or any kind of money? So, and you know as well as I do that they might tolerate us, but they don't like us because they believe in equality and they believe in the baby Jesus. And anybody that really believes in the baby Jesus has got to believe in equality because that's what their good book says. The devil's book. Yeah, that's right. So me trying to go over there and walk in and identify myself, I think is a waste of time because we'd get the cold shoulder from them too. So, but that's okay. But I do want to go over and at least have a pizza and say hi, you know. We'll wait till all the Jew press get out of there because that wouldn't, anyhow, you know what I mean. And like I said on Saturday, I believe in total freedom to discriminate against whoever you want. You're not free unless you're free. And if I remember, that's what drove me at least to the right very quickly in California when they came out with the Rumford Fair Housing Bill, when they got the law that you had to sell your house to whoever come along with the money, that you could not reject anybody because of race or religion, I guess, too. Well, when that happens, you're no longer... They can talk about freedom all they want, but it's bullshit. If you don't have control of your property, you're a slave. And that's just the facts. If you can't control your own property or have private property, then you're a serf or a peasant or a slave. And, of course, that's what they're moving towards now very quickly, as more and more people, because they can't make it on the farm, or agribusiness has taken over the countryside to where small farmers can't compete, and the people all over the world are pouring into the cities. It don't make any difference whether it's here in the United States or where it is. They're pouring into the cities, and then the big contractors are building these great big beehives, and I used to call them high-rise incubators, and they're renting this stuff out, you know, and so more and more people in the population are going to be dumbed down to peasant position and living in a small apartment and paying very high rents. It's going on in New York. They did have some rent control there, but that's gradually being about 20% a year, I guess, is being phased out. So then the landlords of these places can raise the rent at least 20-30%. Well, most of the people living in those places are not going to be able to pay it. So more and more people will be on the street, you see. And like in places like Mexico City and Rio de Janeiro and all over, there's tremendous numbers of people living on the street, building shacks around the dump in the outer city. The predatory capitalists are absolutely in control, and they're going to run it right into the ground, as far as I'm concerned, because whether it's between races or what, there's going to be giant upheavals and chaos and revolution, and they know it. The ruling class is preparing for it, and they've got at least $3 trillion banked offshore, these rich bastards, and so, and the government won't slap their fingers and tax them. So you gotta know who they're working for, your congressmen, your senators. They're working for the ruling class. In a way, they always did, but it's getting to be more out in the open now, because as the middle class disappears in this country, which I told you before was sort of an oddity in history because it was built on the destruction of the competition of Europe and Japan and Asia and all that, and even Soviet Union. And that helped create the middle class in this country. And but that's going away now. You don't have production in this country. You don't have, of course, jobs. If you don't have production, you don't have jobs. And it's not coming back. So get ready for the peasant situation. You might as well get used to living on a small amount of money and small amount of land and a whole bit. Stay out of debt. Get out of those credit cards, and don't go out and buy big pieces of property and big old houses, because it's all going to go away. I think I sent you out a story about a young fellow, he's still, I believe, in high school, that has taken one of these airport shuttle buses and built his home in there, and there's 90 square feet in this thing, and he's got it all fixed up to where he lives in it. And he seems to live in it quite comfortably in 90 square. Now you see a lot of construction companies now are coming out with small houses. And I think that's a good idea anyhow, you know. But the trouble is, those small houses, they're going to probably charge as much as they used to charge for a big house. But wherever you can, I think you should get people, either you build your own house, smaller house, or get somebody that needs the work to do it for you. Now, this bus that this young man did himself, he's got solar panels on the roof. He's got four solar panels up there that give him about 400 watts of electricity, which he runs his computers and various things in his bus. I think a lot of us are going to have to go, a lot of our younger people are going to have to go mobile before too long. Live in mobile units, campers and stuff like that. And so he can move around to where maybe the jobs are at or from one place to another. It's just the way it's coming, and you might as well get ready for it. Now, you can go down to a lot of these wrecking yards and find the campers. Some of them are still in pretty good shape, and you can buy them cheap. Or you can buy a bus, even if the motor's gone on it. And you can get a guy with the wrecker to pull it over onto your property, and there you'll have a living space. And I know recently a wrecking yard not far from me had quite a number of them in there, and I thought about pulling one over behind my house, but I haven't done that. But that's another way. You don't have to have a Winnebago that runs, just as long as you can pull it someplace where you have control over a lot or piece of land. And then if you want to fix up the engine in your spare time, well, you can do it later, because nowadays there's nothing you can't do from portable, whether it's the laptop computer, whether it's satellite TV, anything like that you can do with very little power, and you can do it any place. So you're not tied down like we used to be. Like I mentioned the other day, I dug out another little book in my library. You know, I got so many books that a lot of them I've never opened. I mean, because I just don't have the time. But every once in a while I find another one that's a jewel. And then here's a little book that, let's see, it was written in copyright 1959. This book was sold in New York City. And it's called The Race Problem. Segregation or Integration? Cosmic Laws of Evolution. The Great Controversy of Our Time. I'll read a little bit of it here. Wait a minute. Well, let's start out here with some of the cute little statements in the front. Time brings truth to light. Truth is cosmic law in operation. It dazzles the ignorant and the impure in heart. Truth fears and favors no one. Unbound, it walks, looking only for a sympathetic heart and an open mind to receive it. To those who have found it, truth is the source of all health, wealth, and understanding, wisdom and inspiration in life. Man finds himself and nature's God through truth. Like ever draws nigh to like. The sole equality of the earth is death. No economic equality can survive the working of the biological inequality. Your levelers wish to level down as far as themselves, but they cannot bear leveling up to themselves. Strong is the mob, but mindless. Well, there you go. Let's see here. The race problem. Segregation or integration. Many persons today, in their ambition to become great and famous through a quick and easy way, without possessing suitable qualifications for such a status, or for their selfish political interests, have taken up a certain trend from some religious, philosophical, or humanitarian movement, which they twist to suit their purposes according to plan. Then they advance these ideas in a most fanatical manner, trying to convert the entire world to them, to the only truth in their movement, which is going to save the world and solve all the problems created by human ignorance and disobedience. We must remember that under cosmic law, man evolves individually. Animals, being controlled by a group soul, evolve as a class or as a species. Man is an individualized soul, and as such, he travels alone. In this case of human evolution, the soul unfoldment, segregation applies. The law, like attracts like, rules supreme in the universe, which results in the segregation of similar species in animals and among men of similar unfoldment, on and for keeping the balance of humanity as a whole. Nature could not have made such a colossal mistake in creating the human races without any reason and use for them. Consequently, the races, in order to perform the task assigned to them by nature and to fulfill their destiny, should be kept pure and separate from each other. Of course, it should be understood that before the highest and ultimate cosmic laws, all things and beings, men and races, are potentially equal, regardless of their present degree of evolution. This is an entirely different proposition from that of proclaiming that all beings, all men, all races are equal per se. The solution of this important problem of our society today is rather the task of a scientist, a philosopher, and a metaphysician than that of a dogmatic edict of a lawyer, a judge, or of a politician or a demagogue. Diversification and evolution, since evolution is a basic law of creation and means a continuous progress of all things and beings, it logically follows that there is no equality in anything in nature. Everything exists in an environment of things that being unequal and different from each other, and they all strive to improve themselves through effort and continuous struggle for survival and supremacy. The cosmic fact brings us to the logical conclusion that in a society where equality of all men is proclaimed and practiced, anarchy, corruption, and degeneration gradually set in, resulting in its destruction. And that's what's happening right now, boys and girls. So you don't have to really go out and do much. Just stand by. It's coming. But you do have to take care of your own personal situation. Joining a group, some group, is not going to do the job for you, because what's going to be is going to be. The world's history is replete with such examples. On the contrary, a well-organized and progressive society is based upon brotherly differentiation and respect for self and for others according to their individual inner values. Throughout nature, the law of the survival and the fittest rules. Although to the average person this law seems to be cruel, nevertheless, in the last analysis, it demonstrates the supreme justice and wisdom of the Creator. And it helps to maintain universal progress and evolution. Everywhere in nature, the stronger, the superior, and the more advanced among both animals and men prevails either through physical fear or through respect for intellectual and spiritual superiority. The working of this natural pattern maintains the harmonies in society through discipline by classifying each of its unequal members according to its own merits and demerits. At present, by proclaiming equality per se for all members of our society, we're responsible for the lawlessness, hypocrisy, dishonesty, greed, the corruption and degeneration and crimes that exist. Pythagoras, the father of Greek philosophy and one of the greatest and wisest men that ever lived on earth, realized the importance of this cosmic law and its applications to society. Gave us his famous formula through the following precept, quote, "The man who knows more than I know is my father. He who knows less than I, my son. The man who knows as much as I is known as my brother." all of which proves conclusively that the cause of present-day chaos in the world is the result of spreading of the man-made unnatural philosophy of equality among all men, instead of practicing know thyself and moral discipline, which form the foundation of all philosophical systems, ancient and modern, and which is one of the basic laws in nature. Major General George Van Horn Moseley wrote on this subject on April 15, 1959, "The most vicious enemy of freedom and liberty is equality. Republics throughout all history have had their birth, their years of vigorous growth, their heyday of world success, which remained only so long as the race that gave the nation its basic strength remained pure." Well, we haven't. And so, it's inevitable what will happen. With the introduction of the interbreeding of lower types, decline came. Finally, national death. Reverend G.T. Gillespie, D.D., President Emeritus of the Belhaven College in Jackson, Mississippi, in his address made before the Synod of Mississippi of the Presbyterian Church, November 4, 1954, stated, quote, "In all nature, the herd instinct prevails to a greater or lesser degree, and all living creatures are drawn together in larger or smaller groups by certain affinities based upon common physical characteristics. Animals, by instincts, mate only with their own kind, perpetuating their own species and transmitting their natural or acquired characteristics to their offspring. No intermingling or crossbreeding with animals of widely different characteristics takes place except under abnormal or artificial conditions." Quote, "The old adage, birds of a feather flock together, only expresses a fact of common observation and universal experience. There are many varieties of the bird family, but under natural conditions, so far as known, bluebirds never mate with redbirds. Doves never mate with blackbirds, nor mockingbirds with jays. The fact that man also is a gregarious animal and that human beings everywhere and under all conditions of life tend to segregate themselves into families, tribes, national or racial groups only goes to prove that all human relations are regulated by this universal law of nature. Segregation tends to promote progress. Quote, it is an elementary principle of livestock breeding that improvement of type comes only through the careful selection of breeding stock and the rigid separation of animals or dissimilar or undesirable characteristics. See, the problem today, not enough young people know anything about the farm. Know almost nothing about or nothing about breeding animals and so forth, and why animals are bred for high quality and you weed out the weak and the sick. They don't see that because they don't have experience, and how could you ever learn that in the city? Unless you might go to Central Park and see something going on there. Anyhow, the phenomenal development of the racehorse, the draft horse, the beef and the dairy breeds of cattle furnish impressive evidence that segregation promotes development and progress, and that it may be continued almost indefinitely by the consistent application of the principle. Whereas the intermingling of breeding stock results invariably in the production of scrubs or mongrel types and the downgrading of the whole herd. Quote, the same principle applies with equal force to the progress of human development. It is a noteworthy fact that down through the centuries, the most conspicuous advances in human progress have been made by these peoples who, by reason of circumstances or by deliberate preference, have been isolated to a great extent from other nations and races over long periods of time, and thus have been free to develop their own peculiar genius and distinctive characteristics and culture. In a similar manner, the Greeks, by reason of geographical situation and other circumstances, enjoyed for centuries comparatively isolation from other people of the world, whom they designated as barbarians. By reason of this separation, they preserved with remarkable success the purity of their racial stock for hundreds of years and succeeded in developing a physical vigor and vitality and intellectual acuteness, artistic perfection, and a political idealism which made Hellenic culture the pattern of inspiration of all Western civilization. Thomas Jefferson, author of the Immoral Declaration of Independence, devoted much attention and study to the Negro problem. He advocated with great earnestness the emancipation of the Negro slaves in America, but he believed so strongly in the physical separation of the races for the welfare of both that he proposed that the Negroes should be peacefully repatriated in Africa at government expense. His point of view is clearly set forth in his extract from his autobiography, written in 1821. Quote, "Nothing is more certainly written in the book of fate that these people are to be free, nor is it less certain that the two races equally free cannot live in the same government. Nature, habit, and opinions have drawn indelible lines of distinction between them. It is still our power to direct the process of emancipation and deportation peacefully." Well, Thomas Jefferson was somewhat of a hypocrite. He enjoyed being a slave owner. He only released one slave, made him free on his deathbed. The rest of them were sold off. And he evidently became involved in a love affair with a mulatto Negro woman. So you can see this gene hijacking is going on for a long time. And so there Lincoln is talking about all this stuff, and here he's screwing a mulatto Negro and taking her to Europe and all that kind of stuff. Abraham Lincoln, one of the wisest and most far-seeing of American statesmen, venerated and almost deified by the Negro race as their great emancipator and unfailing friend, devoted intense study to the race problem for over a period of years. And again, I believe Abraham Lincoln was a flat-out hypocrite too. He, like Jefferson, became so thoroughly convinced of the necessity of physical separation of the races that he considered the most practical solution of the problem was to colonize the Negroes in Africa or the West Indies. Now, the time to do that would have been at the end of the war. He had all the military there. He had the overwhelming power of the military. And before he sent them home, he should have used the armies to gather up all these blacks, herd them over to the coast, get all the boats he could, and got them back to Africa. But he didn't. And like I said, he did sort of limp-wristedly say, raise money to ship them to Nicaragua, but the Nicaraguans thought different and told him they didn't want them. He actually had made, you know, of course, there were 200,000 Negroes fighting on the side of the North. So, I mean, you know, there's so much hypocrisy in this stuff. He actually had made proposals to this effect to Congress and was engaged in working out plans for putting it into execution at the time of his tragic death. Well, I don't think he worked that hard at it, because it would have been very simple to tell the armies that the war is over, round all these people up, get them over to the coast, and gradually get them on ships and get them out here. It could have been done easily. But once the army was disbanded pretty much, it was too late. In a speech made by Lincoln at Charleston, Illinois, September. Well, by this time, you see, also the northern industrialists are seeing, well, we got a whole labor reserve here that's they're just standing around with their finger in their butt. Well, we can get this cheap labor up here, and we can break the backs of any unions, white unions that are coming on the scene in the latter part of the 19th century. And let's do that. Let's take these Negroes out of regular slavery, chattel slavery, and we'll make them wage slaves, like the white people have been for a long time. He actually had made proposal to this effect in Congress and was engaged in working out plans and putting it in execution at the time of his tragic death. Well, anyhow, in a speech made by Lincoln at Charleston, Illinois, you know, that's where Brother David Tate is at. There's a prison in Charleston, Illinois. In fact, I'm going to go over there one of these days and visit David Tate, who was one of the people in the order that's languishing in the Charleston pen over there. It's a state pen, Charleston, Illinois. September 18, 1858, he said, "I will say then that I am not now nor I've ever been in favor of bringing about any way the social and political equality of the white and black races." Yeah, but you had to have known what would happen if you didn't get rid of them. You cannot have two large racial populations living side by side, even with segregation, and expect it to last. Segregation was just a bad... it was trying to do something, but it was a bad idea. Only total exclusion, physically, could do anything of any good for us. "That I am not now nor have been in favor of making voters or jurors out of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office or to intermarry with white people." But you know, at the time, there was quite a percentage of people already among the abolitionists that were supporting miscegenation between the races. "And I will say in addition to this that there is a physical difference between the white and black races which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on the terms of social and political equality." Well, that's true, because it's not working. They're trying to make it look like it worked. It's working. They spent billions of dollars, and the predatory capitalists and the churches and all that, they've spent millions and billions of dollars trying to really force this integration. But in the end, it'll come apart. It'll come apart with very different warring factions and so forth. Again, in an address made to a group of free Negroes at the White House on August 14, 1862, Lincoln said, quote, "You and we are different races. We have between us a broader difference than exists between any other two races. Whether it is right or wrong, I need not discuss, but this physical difference is a great disadvantage to you, to us both, and you too, as I think if this is admitted, it will afford a reason, at least, why we should be separated." Well, the blacks had everything to gain by integrating. I mean, and gene hijacking is helping them out. Now, like I keep telling you, the big enemy now is not so much the black man, but the rising mulatto race, which is just boiling over now. You see it all over television. And, of course, you know, white guys being what they are, they're going to bed down with these better-looking Negroes that have, through breeding, gene hijacking, got enough white blood in that they don't look objectionable. It was the recognition of this truth which made Booker T. Washington, the most influential leader and the greatest benefactor of the Negro race in his generation, and perhaps the whole history of the Negro race. In a notable and epoch-making address delivered at the Atlanta Exposition in 1895, pleading for cooperation between the two races, he sounded the keynote of his philosophy and provided for all men of understanding and goodwill a key to the solution of the problem. He said, quote, "The wisest among my race understand that agitation of questions of social equality is the extremest fallacy and folly, and that progress in the enjoyment of all the privileges that will come to us must be result of severe and constant struggle rather than artificial forcing. In all things that are purely social, we can be separated as the fingers, yet one as the hand in all things essential to mutual progress." Well, See, he's preaching this separate but equal stuff. You see, that it can't work because it's not true. Charles D. B. Davenport, in his book The Effects of Race Intermingling, states that the progress and advancement made in the culture of peoples was the result of their superior racial stock, and that when we started to practice miscegenation, decadence, dilution, or extinction of our white racial elements and characteristics took place, that the racial intermixture with Negroes who had come and settled in Egypt and who worked as laborers for the Egyptians marked the beginning of the end of a great people and a great nation. In fact, that's spelled out very carefully in the book White America by Xavier Cox. And if you've never read White America by Xavier Cox, you should try to get it. I think you can get it from some of the booksellers. And I think we put that up on our website. I think Wolf Wall Street did a lot of books for us there for a while, and I think a lot of these things are up there. This book I'm reading out of now is not up there. The mongrelized descendants of the Egyptians were unable to advance or even to maintain their cultural state, which resulted in the disappearance of Egypt from the family of other cultured nations of the world. And right today, it's the way it's happened. They got overpopulation in Egypt, tremendous debt. Egypt's going to collapse just like these other countries have been collapsing as time goes on. You know, at one time, the Nubian Negro was not allowed over a certain barrier in Egypt. And if they came across that certain line of demarcation, they were killed automatically. The Egyptians killed them. And it was that way for who knows how many hundreds and thousands of years. But then they did the same thing the United States did. They said, well, maybe we could bring them in and have them be servants and stuff, which they did. And then maybe we could put them up in the master's house and take care of the kids, which they did. And next thing, we got a lot of enemies, let's put them in the army, and which they did. And there went Egypt down the tube. The same thing happened to the Greeks when, through immigration and intermixing with inferior and sterile groups, as well as due to the sterility of the superior families, caused the increase of the numbers and the dominance of the hybrid and the inferior strains in the Greek blood, which brought about the racial and cultural decline of Greece. And that accounts for racial hijacking, genetic hijacking. In Rome, the same repetition of what had happened in Egypt and to Greece occurred. The original vigorous Roman stock was corrupted by racial intermixture and mongrelized group, which resulted, lacking the capacity and the vigor to perpetuate the Roman culture and superiority. Well, yeah, along with that, though, was Christianity. Definitely, Christianity was one of the big reasons Rome fell, along with race mixing and everything else. In the same way, the brilliant culture of the Renaissance was... Well, you can read that in... The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire by, forget his name right at the moment. It brings that all out. In the same way, the brilliant culture of the Renaissance was followed by an era of chaos because the caste lines protecting the Teutonic aristocracy from the inferior blood contamination was broken down. Our modern cultural distribution among the peoples and the nations of the world tells the same sad story. Everywhere in the world, we see that the mixed nations are the backward ones. The Mexican population, which is being a hybridized Indian group, is superior to the native Indian tribes, but it's inferior to the Spanish, who mingled their blood with it, that of the native Mexican women. A similar thing occurred in South America. The present stock generally shows cultural differences, consequences of miscegenation, with a physical physically divergent and cultural lower racial group. In our own country, the first colonists, in their ignorance and fanatical religious zeal, destroyed the native Indians. Then the country was repopulated by a North European stock. The present cultural contrast that exists between the North and South American countries is a proof of the consequences of the differences in their respective cultures due to this racial policy and practice. Thus, we can see that the hybrid groups everywhere are backward and decadent. Well, I'd like to ask, how would you have treated the Indians, knowing that you're developing a whites-only country, in which is in their constitution? What would have been the answer to the Indian situation? Well, no matter how much we think it might be nice to try to live alongside them, you really can't. Not if you're a true racist, racial separatist. So either one or two things would have to happen, and here's where the Christians come in with their liberal thinking that, oh, you can't do that, you can't do that. Well, you either have to drive them all out of the country, but then you're faced with driving them into Canada, which is a white country, and they had their Indian problem too. Or you drive them down into Mexico and Central America, which just compounds the problems down there, and because things were pretty much run by a white Spanish governments and so forth. So the only other solution was to kill them off. And that seems like a really nasty thing, but it's, what are you going to do? General Sherman once was quoted as saying, the only good Indian's a dead Indian. I see among white youth and even the blacks today, they whine and cry over the American Indian, who is a Mongol. He's not an Indian. Columbus didn't get that right, that's for sure. But he, what are you going to do? You know, and the Indians, the Mongols, should have fought to the death, is what they should have done. But almost all Indians went freely onto the reservation, took a blanket or two and some food, and moved onto the reservation. So all this great warrior stuff is a lot of malarkey. Geronimo, when he was cornered down in Arizona, I believe it was, he only had 25 warriors standing with him. The rest of the Indians had all gone onto the reservations and bought into the Christian crap, or at least pretended to. And of course, all this pro-Indian stuff, we can't do this, we can't do that, was being promoted more by the churches than anything else. Always in there, always causing trouble. And always wanting to, it used to be a curse if you miscegenated or mingled with an Indian, a Mongol. But on the other hand, it happened anyhow. And so you got to have total separation. You either got to have a white man's country or not. There's no in between. So among the many books that we concluded on the race problem is The Race Question from The White Chief by Archibald Cody IV. In this remarkable outspoken book, the thoughts of the late American statesman, governor of Mississippi, 1904 to 1908, and U.S. Senator, 1913 to 19, James Kimball Vardaman, on intermixing the white and the Negro race, are expounded with logic and sincerity. These truths are most helpful and timely at the present, most dangerous situation for our country. Quote, one must consider our racial problem in the light of facts based on the natural law and avoid mere theories which as such have no value. These theorists' hope of changing human nature, which however persists to remain unchanged as the leopard spots, no race is called upon to break its birth invidious bar, but has the right to take its place among the other races, measured by merit, achievement, and ability. On this ground, every race and every man stands as an equal, without qualification. In other words, equal to struggle. And if you're not up to the struggle, then you're not equal. And no one race can do that against the other race. There's no other basis for equality, for whenever a right or a privilege is demanded, it implies the ability to discharge the duties and responsibilities which are inseparable in a part of every right. A privilege is meaningless without its companion duty. Every individual in every race which demands rights, which have been won by stouter hearts and stronger hands, must be prepared to demonstrate the capacity to properly use that which comes as a gift. The Negro is entitled to equitable treatment and equal opportunity, but not the same treatment. The statement is equally true if we substitute white man for the word Negro. The practical effect of this means justice instead of theoretical equality, which produces injustice and animosity. The recognition of the fact that the Negro and the white man are different eliminates the question of which is superior. Let's look at it this way. Nature made white, black, red, and yellow. He sends rain and sunshine to all alike. The earth and nature give their bounty in the same return to all. But nature did not endow all races in the same way, nor in the same extent. But he endowed them with equality, equally in the sense that each has a title of inequity to the part he received, and each has the absolute right to opportunity to be all that he can. Well, I say here again, I don't use the word right because I don't believe rights exist. Privileges exist. The more powerful, the people in power, are able to hand out privileges. They can't hand out rights because right is something that, according to most people's interpretation, it's something they can't take away from you. That some god or some government or some king can give you a right which can't be taken away from you, and that's bullshit. Anything can be taken away from you by people or forces that are stronger than you. Those that go about all over the world seeking to bestow the blessings of liberty and the benefits of democracy began at the wrong end, for these things are not manna from heaven, but are the price of struggle, courage, and sacrifice. Privileges and rights are the possession of the strong. Mankind is endowed with a gregarious instinct that draws people of the same race and language to a clan, a tribe, a confederation, and finally a nation. Other influences than race and language have only a minor role. This gregarious instinct is a centripetal urge that pulls man into association with his fellows and makes survival and progress possible. At the same time, there is an instinct which repels unlike races because it is not nature's way to mix races and species, but always to develop clear and distinct species. I think that's from that senator or whatever. He's long-winded as far as I'm concerned. There are two forces which hold together solid matter called cohesion and adhesion. The first is much stronger and more durable because it holds like particles. In a similar way, a nation of like peoples is held together by cohesion of race, language, and blood. A nation of dissimilar groups may be said merely to adhere. A small stress, and it comes apart. And, of course, it's been playing along these lines for decades now, but it'll come apart. It always does. It always has everywhere in the world. Show me a mixed-race society in a country, any place, where the only way they can maintain order is having a small group at the top with the weapons and the armies to keep them in line. Otherwise, like in India, they fight each other and they kill each other by the thousands. A lot of people don't realize all the fighting between religious groups and ethnic groups in India, that they just go nuts. And of course now down in Africa, you see, these people, once you give them a gun, you've committed a mortal sin. Or maybe it's racial justice, I don't know, if they're going to kill each other off. But I think it's an idea, but it should be more honest about it. The system should be more honest and say, we don't want these guys around. We want to control things and do it, rather than giving people a bunch of bullshit that they do. A nation of one racial strain is most likely to progress, to grow, and maintain its existence over the centuries. The more racial groups in a nation, the weaker it is, and the shorter its life. Well, look around you. Is that why maybe you, like me, I don't enjoy getting together with white people anymore? Because they care nothing for their future. They care nothing for their kids. They don't see the racial thing, and they're off praying to maybe Jesus and all that kind of stuff. And you don't see any attraction to hang out with them. I mean, almost in anything, I've found that. In fact, I have tried to mingle a little bit with the locals around here, but they're so damn dumb. And if you sit down at a bar to have a beer, there'll be, you know, three or four or five regulars in there, and then talk about nothing. They talk about football, basketball, how many fish did you catch, and the weather, but they won't talk about anything important to the survival of the race. And I just have to leave in disgust. I just have to sit in my bunker and have my little drink. Fuck them. I mean, it's terrible. And they're all out there waving the flag. And every time you go to something, sometimes I go out, do a little karaoke at one of the lodges. And invariably, they'll play that song, Stand Up for America, and they'll get all excited, stand up and hold hands and all that bullshit. I won't even get up from my chair. I mean, they're so lost. A nation of one racial strain is most likely to progress, to grow, and to maintain its existence over the centuries. The more racial groups in a nation, the weaker it is, and the shorter its life. Yeah, compared to other empires and countries, we haven't been around long enough to really talk about it. You know what, 300-400 years max? The chances of war and civil strife are increased by the racial varieties, and the capacity successfully to wage war is decreased. Well, it doesn't seem to be decreased when you go outward. You know, they get away with that. They go attack other countries and take what they've got. And I hope that they start attacking internally. I think that that's another, you know, worse is better situation. I mean, you know, thousands, tens of thousands of us are going to die. And maybe in battle, maybe not. But it's going to have to happen. And or nothing will ever change. A nation made up of diverse and unassimilable racial groups can exist only when its government, its military, and the productive power are securely in the hands of a homogeneous group with the ability to rule. Well, they are, but that's a small 2% of the population. That's the problem. It's not anything like democratic. Middle class, what's left of it, think they've got something to say and they're going to vote and they're going to do this. It's all bullshit. There's no difference between these assholes running for government, senator and president and all that. And they're just going nuts. If you listen to satellite radio, that's all they're talking about. Whoa, who's going to get it? Oh, how's the polls going now? It means nothing. The attempt to have a democratic government in a nation composed of hostile racial groups is only one short step to twilight and the dark. Ancient Rome is one example. Mark my word, these races in the country, they sort of pretend in a way, make nice, but if you listen carefully, they're ready to go. They're ready to clean us out. They get a few guys that are talking, oh yeah, we love the white man, you know, and the Christians, we love them and all that. But believe me, if things turn a little sour, you better be ready to fight for your life because they're coming for you. And if they win, it's our fault. It's not their fault. They're trying to better themselves through racial and military means. And that is something that is... nature does respect it. Nature does not back it all the way, but survival of the fittest. That's it. In such a nation, the government must be securely in the hands of one group with legal and economic justice to all. Well, you see, that's the problem. There's no legal and economic justice to all. We may temper justice with a little mercy and at least exclude malice from our decisions. But in the bitter struggle for survival, authority must be in the hands of the capable and the strong. Well, it's not in the hands of the capable and the strong. It's in the hands of weak, kneed, cowardly sons of bitch and whites and their Jewish buddies who themselves are cowards to the man. And they would not go over and fight in the Middle East if their life depended on it. And it should depend on it. So we're not being... The authority isn't capable and strong. They're just rats. And just because they've got all the military hardware and can tell people where to go and where to drop the bombs, that makes them leaders. Leaders. It ought to never be forgotten that this country is a republic, not a democracy. Well, forget that. Didn't we all know that a long time, 40 years ago when I first got started? This is was supposed to be a republic. It didn't turn out that way. And true democracy doesn't work either. They talk about it all the time, but there's no democracy going on now in this country. Very little democracy, let's put it that way. And we as a people have never consented that the weak and the venial are to have a place of equality at the council table. Well, that's true. Subversive groups cannot be tolerated without considering that virtue must compromise with evil. Regardless of the theoretical rights, it has not yet been demonstrated that a contribution of ignorance, vice, cowardice, and greed can add anything to the sum total of human welfare or to improve the quality of government. Well, that's all we got now. I mean, finding an honest politician, and then among anyone that might be honest, to find one who would stand up for his race, forget it, that's all over. We're about two-thirds through the overthrow. Yeah, about two-thirds through, and so the next third will be the cleaning up of the white race in totality if it does not strike back. And I mean brutally, brutally strike back. No half measures are going to make it. And no pity-ass little groups of guys running around knocking off a couple of Negroes standing on the corner got anything to do with it. You know what you got to do. I've been talking to you for a long time. Been saying the same things now for at least 25 years. All the mass writers, speakers, and ignorant and vicious meddlers who propose solutions of race question have in common a number of erroneous assumptions. They are also arrogant to themselves inerrancy, and their theories become in their own minds proven and demonstrated facts. Conditions and conclusions. This paragraph from The Valor of Ignorance by Homer Lay, and that's a book you should read, is an accurate description. Thus, it is the sophist and theorists and all the category have not left to mankind throughout the ages of the human race one single substantial legacy, and for no reason than that they try to invent out of the airy nothings that which the laws and forces governing the world deny of labor to create out of the nebulosity of their own sick brains, elements unknown to nature. As far as the world is concerned, they might as well be a louse on the back of a wild duck as its wings its way through the stormy night. See, the thing that's depressing for most of you, and me too, but you can't let it get you down, is that we're surrounded by insane people. I mean, they are literally insane. I can't think of any other words to describe it. Their main contribution is confusion, thereby adding to the difficulty of arriving at a fair conclusion. One cause of the complete error of these theorists is that human and racial relations are not governed by any known law except natural or written. The only invariable rule of the human action is that it is constantly variable. A second cause of error is that the acts of human beings are not to be judged by the rule of perfection, or what given person receives as perfection. The teachings that every individual should be unselfish and should make sacrifice for the others is counter to pure logic. There you go, that goes to might is right, which demonstrates selfishness as the correct way of life. If A should sacrifice for B, where is the limit? And is not B under the equal obligation to make some sacrifice for A? Now you see this in Ferguson, Missouri, where they're all marching around. You see whites in all these demonstrations sacrificing for blacks, but you don't see blacks sacrificing for whites. You occasionally maybe one or two, but in general they just want. They want to take, gimme. And that's the way it goes. Why is any person, any group of persons, or any race under the obligations to practice forbearance, self-denial, and charity to another? They're not. It flies in the face of natural law. The questions merely demonstrate that neither all persons nor all races are equally subject to some rules or conduct of law. We also must recognize that times and conditions necessarily modify every rule of action, theoretical and practical. We must judge according to the limitations of intelligence and environment of each person or group of persons. Allowance must be made for the appraiser and his imperfections. Well, I think that's about it for today. I think this is an excellent little book. I think I might reprint it in small numbers because it's one of the better little books I've seen. So anyhow, that's it for today. I'm going to send you a couple of pictures along with the show that you can download. It shows how to do this non equal sign with just electrical tape. And if you want to make a big one, you can use black Gorilla tape and make a big sign real quick. And if you go into an area you don't want it on your car, you just peel it off. And of course, our latest sign on our world-renowned, racist, bigot, hateful lit sign in front of our house. Now, the one I'm going to put up now tomorrow is, they got a guy, they gave him a half a page, the National Guard recruiter, a big fat bastard, he's going to the high schools and bullshitting these 17-year-olds and getting them in the army. Well, I'm going to put a sign up there that's going to frost his ass, I'll tell you, and I'll send it to you once I get it put together. That's it for today. Might makes right. Yeah. Equality is bullshit. Rights are bullshit. And, well, that's it. Bye-bye.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June. I said
that's life.
And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out. And I know one thing. Each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
I tell you, I can't deny it. I thought of quitting, baby, but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. And if I didn't think it was worth one single try, I'd jump right on a big bird and then I'd fly. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out. And I know one thing. Each time I find myself laying flat on my face, I just pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
That's life. And I can't deny it. Many times I thought of cutting out, but my heart won't buy it. But if there's nothing shaking come this here July, I'm gonna roll myself up in a big ball and